Welcome to LOA Today. I'm Walt Thiessen, and this is your Daily Dose of Happy. We're so happy you joined us today. Cindy Chavez, life coach Cindy Chavez, is with us today. And Cindy, we've got some relationship stuff to talk about today. I know you really hate that topic, but
that's my happy place.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. I forgot. Yes. No, of course I didn't forget. But we got a message from a listener, and we have three other messages from people who aren't regular listeners but are interested in your input in particular because of your expertise as a relationship coach. So this is definitely Relationship Wednesday. But you're also going to be pleased to know that in the first question that comes from Deborah, she's also making reference to Neville Goddard. So it's both relationships and Neville Goddard in one question.
Oh, my goodness. Yes, that's great.
And I'm not even sure it's actually a question. Well, yeah, it is a question. It's more like a topic idea, I guess. So we won't be able to spend the whole show on it because we have those other questions to get to. But let me read it to you. She says, thank you for the great show today. This was like a week ago. Some really helpful stuff from both of you. Your talk of changing the past reminded me of an episode you recorded a few years ago on this show regarding revising the past with Neville Goddard. I remember at the time, the concept sort of blew my mind, and I wonder if this might be a concept we could explore again. Of course, you may feel that you already covered it in its entirety at the time, but it's just a thought. Many thanks, and hope you had a splendid day. So why don't we take a moment to just kind of revisit the pruning shears of revision?
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. I actually was talking about this with someone this morning, so it's kind of interesting. Somebody that I was coaching told me something that they were doing, like a process that they just sort of made up or thought they made up, right? And I said, have you ever heard of Neville Goddard? And they said, no. And I was shocked because it really was this sort of process, right? But I was also thinking about this idea. I don't have a name for it. I like the pruning shears of revision is what Neville calls it. But this idea that if you look back in your life and you see a time, you think of a time when you were, you know, younger and maybe worried about something and then things turned out okay. And maybe at some point when you were really down, really struggling, really worried, you know, something gave you hope, or maybe nothing specific happened to, you know, give you that hope where you can put your finger on it, but you just started feeling better about it, right? It's like you just kind of, they have all kinds of words. We have all kinds of cliches we say, like pull yourself up by your bootstraps or put your chin up or, but you know, at some point where you just say, okay, I think I'm going to be okay. Well, I sometimes do this thing where I will, in meditation, reach back to my younger self and say, everything's going to be okay. Like, I want you to know that it turns out fine. Like, you make it, right? Mm-hmm. Like, reach back to my self that was 20 years younger than I am now and say, I feel you. Like, I know you're struggling and I know you're worried, but I just want to let you know that in the future, you become a very powerful magician and everything is okay. And it dawned on me one time when I was doing that was I making a time loop? When I remember being upset and suddenly feeling like, okay, I'm going to make it. I feel better. Tomorrow's another day. It's brighter after a good night of sleep. Was that really because my future self was reaching back and saying, it's going to be all right?
it's a conundrum.
It kind of goes on and on, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And I've wondered the same thing myself at times. There have been times I kind of look back and said, it's almost as if I did talk to myself. I wonder what I would have said. And I never really completed the thought, but it made me wonder.
So I kind of do this full circle. Like sometimes I will ask my future self for a hint about something. And then other times I will reach back to my, and so I think, is my future self, when I suddenly feel like things are going to be okay now, is that because my future self is reaching back to me in my timeline right now? It's fun to think about these things. But the pruning shears of revision specifically in regards to relationship can be a really powerful thing because you're actually, I think, changing your brain when you do this, right? So our brain, a lot of times people will obsess over things going on in a relationship. Like maybe they've gotten in an argument with someone they care about, or they've had some kind of discussion that didn't feel good, and they will replay it in their mind over and over.
Oh, yeah.
And so what happens when we do that is that we are creating neural connections around that incident that get stronger and stronger. So thinking about it over and over usually doesn't make it any better. It just makes those emotions more vivid. It just kind of solidifies it. It causes those neural connections to grow together stronger. And so the pruning shears of revision are actually when we think about that conversation and we change it in our mind. So one of Neville's stories that was the easiest, simplest one was about a woman that had seen somebody during her day, someone she knew, and someone who was always kind to her, and they were not kind to her. I think she said hello to them in passing, and they just kind of snubbed her, and it really bothered her. And what she ended up doing was going back and imagining that scene and imagining a very simple conversation instead. So imagine, she imagined herself saying hello just the way she did, and the other person saying, hello, how are you? Right? Just with a smile. Very simple. Neville often gives very simple explanations.
He does.
But I have done this myself, and I've had clients do this with conversations that weren't so simple, with conversations that were painful and dramatic. And I've had them go back and imagine the conversation in a different way. Imagine it the way they wish it would have taken place. Imagine that the other person said something to them that was more in the lines of what they wanted to hear. And imagine themselves also saying something that they, you know, view now as a better thing to say. Maybe something kinder, maybe something a little more generous. And I encourage them to imagine the conversation like that. Like every time it comes up in their mind, imagine it that way. And really some serious miracles have occurred using that kind of method. You know, like the person does come around and say those things, or the person brings up the conversation and says, you know, I wish it would have gone differently, or there's just some kind of amends made. So I love that whole idea of, are we really changing the past? When you think about it, all we have is now. So anything I tell you that's happened in the past, I mean, it is literally just a figment at this point. It's just a memory. It's just a wisp. And so if I change my, you know, it's kind of like one of those philosophical questions, right? If I change my memory of it, does it actually change?
Yeah.
Does it change what happens with it going forward? I think it's worth a shot. It feels
well, better. I mean, the example you gave is beautiful because it's an example of something we all experience, something that's repetitive. When it repeats, then it's easier for us to believe, first of all, because we've had it both in the past and presumably in the future and in the now when we're experiencing it. But because it has all three of those aspects, I think it makes it easier for us to believe that we really can revise that in some way going forward. The one thing that I've noticed, and I'm curious to know if you've noticed this either with yourself or with clients of yours, is on those occasions where I have done this, not necessarily thinking about Neville Goddard or specifically trying to revise something, trying to change the situation, more along the lines of, like, I want the situation to change and I'm not really thinking about how to do it, and I'm not paying any attention to anything I know about conscious creation or law of attraction. I just want to change it. I wish that they would do this instead. And then they do this instead, and I go, oh, thank goodness. And I fail to make the connection to the fact that I asked for it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, right.
I think that happens a lot. And that's why I bring that up. I think we actually revise our conversations a lot more than we realize, because we don't realize the result when it came was an indicator that we actually changed it in somebody else, in their behavior pattern.
It kind of goes along with the idea that is a Abraham Hicks idea, I think, but the, you know, the ask, that the ask is energetic. Now, I am a proponent of asking, like literally asking with our mouth, verbally or in writing or something, like asking, taking the action to ask for what we need, for what we want, for what we desire. But just the vibration of desire is an ask in itself.
That's true. Yes.
Right. So like you're saying, if something happens and in our mind we're thinking, I wish this would go a different way. I wish they would do something different. I wish things were different. We may not ever verbalize that. And then when it does, like you said, sometimes we think, oh, I'm glad that worked out. And we don't connect that our energetic signature was actually an ask.
Right. Yeah.
So I think, you know, we talked earlier about this, and I've been talking about it with clients, of course, but the idea that the only time in your life that you get everything you need without having to ask is when you're in the womb. And that after you're born, you begin to kind of squeak for what you want, and then you scream for what you want, and then you learn how to say a few words and ask specifically or more specifically for what you want. And so it's an indicator that the more mature you are, the better you are at asking. So for years, I had big trouble asking, and I'm realizing now, well, that's a sign of my maturity or immaturity. I need to be better at asking. I need to practice the ask, right? Because
yeah, true.
Everything that we're good at, you know, sometimes we're just naturally good at something, but even if you're naturally good at something, you can work at getting better at it. And if you don't like something or you're not good at it, well, practice. Now, I've had people tell me about drawing. Oh, I'm terrible at drawing. And I ask them, how often do you draw? I don't. Well, if you go buy a sketchbook and you draw every day for 30 minutes for a year, you'll be shocked. You will no longer say, I can't draw. I'm terrible at drawing. Same thing with asking.
Well, actually, you'll be shocked if you think back to the past. At that time when you finally get there, you won't be shocked at all, and you'll forget that you even asked the idea, you know, I'm terrible at drawing. That whole concept will be gone in so many cases. Sure. The awareness is just such a critical piece of understanding how this works. Wow.
Yeah. So I think that, you know, being able to ask for what we want is important. And I think that going back and using the pruning shears of revision is especially powerful in situations where we cannot ask. Maybe the person has passed on and is no longer here on this earth.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. This happens a lot, that people have something that they regret about a relationship that they cannot repair with that person any longer, that they don't have it's not going to happen because the person isn't here or they can't, you know, connect with the person. This is still a powerful exercise to do, even in that kind of situation, because it will change your memory and it will change the vibration you have around that thing so that it's not painful or as painful or as emotionally charged.
Which is really what matters the most anyway, because the person who's passed on, they've left all that stuff behind. They're not in this life anymore. They're on to the next thing, whatever their next thing is. So that to them, it's not the issue. The issue is ours. That's why it's so important for us to clear it up.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's really good. Well, okay. I know we could spend a whole show on that one, but we have other questions to get to. But thanks for sending that in, Deborah. As usual, we love hearing from our listeners. And I just want to throw in a reminder, too. Anyone else who wants to have a question answered or just, you know, comment on a show like Deborah did, take advantage of the fact that we have that form in the LOA Today app. It's the Ask a Question form, but that's just the way it's labeled. You can use it to just send a comment if you want to. And you can address it to which of my 8 co-hosts or myself that you want to send it to, and I'll make sure that it gets onto that show. But it's a great way to, you know, basically get some direct help with what you're trying to do. And plus, we love hearing from listeners. So thank you, Deborah, for sending in that question.
Yeah, thank you so much. We do love hearing from listeners, getting questions, comments, whatever you want to share with us. It always brightens our day to get comments and questions from you.
Absolutely, yeah. So the next question comes from somebody. This is somebody who posted in Facebook named Tina. And she said, I had 2 readings before about me and my boyfriend and whether we're going to get married. And they both said yes, but we are kind of different, I presume, from each other, and we'll have some difficulties. But now my boyfriend wants to break up with me as we have some problems going on. He loves me and I love him so much, but he can't do it anymore. He doesn't want to talk about it, and he's already made up his mind with no going back. I really don't know what should I do? I love him so bad, I can't even imagine myself without him. What am I supposed to do? Now, this is a fairly common thing we see, but can you help Tina?
We do. Well, first I want to address the idea that of the readings. And I have this discussion quite a bit, and it's kind of funny because I always have to kind of preface it by saying, look, I don't have a problem with readings. I'm a reader myself. I'm not a psychic, but I do read cards and, right, and I love oracles. But there's another side to everything, and that is that when we do any kind of reading, I can't speak for anybody else, but it's always an energy signature that's in the moment. It's for that moment. And what I see happen with a lot of people is that they will stay in a relationship that's not working because one of two things happen. Because either a reader or a reading, you know, they may be reading tarot cards or something for themselves, or they may have had a psychic do a reading for them. But because they had some message, right, from some source, whether it's an oracle or a person that's acting as an oracle, that told them something about the relationship, like that said, you will get married. So they stay because they think, well, but this reader said that this was going to happen. And I want to remind you that, you know, there are concepts such as the concept of many worlds or parallel universes. You know, it's like there are lots of potential things that could happen. And sometimes it's not the way we think. The other thing is that they will have some kind of sign or synchronicity. And this is what happened to me. So I speak from personal experience. I had a relationship where there were so many wild signs and synchronicities that I let those things convince me that this was meant to be. And all that those signs and synchronicities really tell you is that you are aligned in that moment. You are synced up, right? Have you ever watched a movie where the sound and the action was not synced up? So the person's lips were moving and it wasn't right in time, right? We use that phrase, synced up, synchronous. So a synchronicity just means you're lined up at that moment with the same vibration as whatever is going on. And so you sometimes get signs and synchronicities. But that doesn't mean that it's etched in stone forever and ever. So even when this relationship was not going well, I stayed because of those synchronicities that happened way back when. I thought, no, but it has to be, you know, it has to be, it's meant to be because of these things. And I don't do that anymore. I realize synchronicities are fun. They feel miraculous sometimes, but they're not really a sign of anything being right or wrong. They're just a sign of what you're aligned with. So to the question, what should I do? I am not an advice person as much as I am a coach. So here's what I know is, even though it feels like you're confused, Tina, is that you know the answer to that question already. And so I'll ask another question. It was the question that did it for me. And that is, why did I ask myself, because I went on and on asking myself, how can I fix this? How can I make this right? How can I make him not want to break up with me? How can I go back to the beginning where everything was flowers and hearts and roses and, you know, stars and twinkles and everything felt wonderful? How do I do that? And I was like really powerful at creating all kinds of things, but I couldn't figure out this one thing. How do I do this? And then I asked myself the question that changed my life. Why do you want to be with someone who doesn't want you? Why do you want to be with someone who wants to break up with you? And I realized in that moment, wait a minute, that isn't what I want at all. I want someone who is crazy about me. I want someone who thinks the world of me, who wants to take care of me in every way, who wants to love me and be connected to me and spend time with me and laugh with me and build a life with me. That's what I really want. I don't want somebody who's trying to get away from me and I'm trying to reel them back, right? And that question literally changed the way I saw the whole situation, because I realized I wasn't really valuing myself. right? Like, look at it this way. You have, if you had a precious child and you were looking for a babysitter, would you try to get a babysitter to come that was literally telling you, I don't want to watch your kid?
That would be rather disastrous, actually.
If you'd be saying, no, please, please come watch my child. And they were saying, I don't want to be around your kid. I don't want to watch your kid. Right? I mean, that sounds simple, but don't you want the babysitter that says, oh my gosh, your child is so precious. I love watching your child. I love taking care of them. They're so exactly. much fun. Yeah, right? I mean, so that might not be very reassuring to you if you're in that situation where you're reaching out. But here's what I see. You're reaching out. You're asking the question. You feel confused about what's going on because a reader told you you would marry. And maybe in that moment, that's what the energy was looking like. Maybe in that moment, in that little snapshot of the moment that the reader looked at in, they were seeing what was going on at that present time. Maybe there was a strong connection and it did look that way. But also weigh those readings and all the messages you get, whether they're from yourself or, you know, anyone else, me, doesn't matter. Weigh it with what you know. Weigh it with what you're seeing with your own eyes. I always go back to this with my clients. And it's sometimes it's tricky ground, right? Because we're all about like visualizing and imagining. And but there's that other thing too, is that what do you really know for sure? So what one of the things you've told me right now is that this man has said to you he wants to break up. So you have to take that as, you know, something you know for sure. There's that quote by Maya Angelou. It says, when someone shows you who they are the first time, believe them. I always kind of apply that to things like this. If somebody's telling you something, I mean, believe them. Take them at their word. And if it's meant to be, things will change. And in the future, it will happen. Best that's advice a, I can give you. What do you that, have that's to a, say, Walt? What's
that's
your
a great take on it. I love your take. I would add that for me, there's also a sort of a spiritual question kind of in the background, a larger question, which is, do we live in a fated universe or do we live in a dynamic changing universe?
Yeah.
And I think we live in a dynamic changing universe, as evidenced by the fact that we are able to attract things via the law of attraction, among other things. We have an ability to basically shape our own lives. Well, if we have the ability to shape our own lives, how can it be fated? That's the thought that keeps going through my mind whenever I hear somebody, obviously in pain, obviously frustrated by what's been going on, but it's like they've kind of skipped over the fact we live in a dynamic universe and it's a good thing. I really wouldn't want to live in a fated universe where everything was all fixed and there was, you know, it's going to play out that way because it had to play out that way. Well, what's my role? What's my purpose? Am I just like here along for the ride? I mean, I don't understand what my role is at that point.
One of my earliest mentors was a phenomenologist who actually taught two different, you know, university courses. And one was on fate practice.
Okay.
And the other was much more akin to conscious creation. And he said, either one of these practices will work for you, but you can't do them both. And so I've always held that viewpoint too. It's like I'm not a big believer in fate, because then that's me saying, well, then how does any of this matter, right? So I love that you brought that up. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, how can you be a conscious creator in a universe where everything's fated? I don't see how any way to do that. How is that possible?
I don't think it is.
I don't think so either. And that's a great thing. That's a really good thing. David Strickle, who does the Tuesday shows with me, the Stream of David, he's a channel who connects to source energy, and that connection he calls the Stream of David. And the stream likes to say over and over again, we don't tell fortunes. We wouldn't try to, because regardless of whatever the vibration is now, we can't say what the vibration is going to be 10 minutes from now or 100 minutes from now.
That, and isn't that exactly what I was saying, right? It's like about a reader saying, looks like you're going to get married. Well, maybe in that moment, it was like all systems are go, right?
Exactly.
Maybe at that moment, it looked perfect. I mean, you know, you check the tires and you start out on a road trip and it might all be good, but, you know, you might run over a nail 10 miles out and you just couldn't foresee that. So I think you know, be true to yourself. That's what I think. I think the world cannot give you anything that you aren't willing to give yourself. Love yourself up really well. Start developing respect for yourself, nurture yourself, care for yourself, and it'll start being reflected back to you. And, you know, that idea, I hear that a lot. It's like, oh, I can't even imagine what my life would be like without this person in my life. And we often feel like that, you know, with people that we're very close to. And then we often sometimes feel like that when a relationship is ending, right? A friendship or a romance, when it's ending, it's like, I don't know what I'm going to do. And I will tell you, it's going to be okay. And you're going to be okay. And you might surprise yourself with how good things get once you get through this transition point, right? It always hurts. Breakups hurt. Broken hearts suck. But from my experience, there's always some kind of treasure that you find that will come out of this hard situation. And then going forward, there's always something so much better. It just is. And so I hope you find peace and joy and the love that you're looking for. And I'm glad that you reached out to us.
Yeah, that's very good. I like that. I'm also reminded too of one other thing in reference to the readings. You and I had a conversation, I'm going to say about a month ago, in which we talked about equating all this to like traveling on a highway and seeing highway signs. And you're driving on the highway and you see there's a sign for your exit in 100 miles. And then 100 miles later, you're kind of not paying any attention. You drive past the exit. And then you say, well, but the sign said it was 100 miles. Like, well, that was 100 miles ago. That's not what the current sign said, exit here. Well, you're saying that the old sign should apply to the new sign. No, what does the new sign say? That's the current one that counts.
That's what I was going to say. It's like, you know, that sign that tells you there's a Shell station, you know, up ahead in a quarter of a mile is great when you're right there. But when you're 50 miles up the road, that sign doesn't matter anymore.
Not really. No.
It's not relevant. So yeah, I understand, you know, sometimes we hang on to things because those things give us hope.
Yes.
And, you know, I understand being there and feeling hopeless and really wanting to grab onto something that gives you hope. But that in itself is sort of a sign. You know, I look back and I realize that during the times I was really holding on to those past synchronicities, it's because I knew in my heart that things were not good. And so I was trying to reach back and find something that would give me some kind of hope that I was in the right place. And so if you're doing that, you know, that's another thing to take into consideration. It's like, why am I doing that? Why am I reaching? Why am I looking back and trying to find something that will give me hope to hang on here? I can speak from the place of being in a really great relationship where I can't find one thing in this relationship that I wish were different. And I realize that that's probably not the case for a lot of people. As a relationship coach, I know it's not the case for a lot of people, but I will tell you that when you're there, you know it. I'm not looking for signs to convince me that I'm in the right relationship. I don't need them. The relationship itself tells me that.
And it's also a case of, you described it really nicely. You actually had internal signs. You had those feelings like, you know, there's something wasn't quite right. You were reaching for something to try to make it right. In other words, you had a sign that was telling you something and you weren't paying attention to it.
Right.
So you're being selective about which signs you wanted to listen to or watch.
Just recognizing now that I'm not going to readers to tell me if I should stay in my relationship. I'm not pulling tarot cards or any kind of cards for myself to see if I should stay in my relationship. I don't need to. I know there's no reason to ask those questions. So just those questions are a hint, right?
That's true. Yeah. I mean, Louise and I have been together 21 years. I never was one to go to a reader anyway, but to ask a reader about, you know, should I stay in this relationship? That's not even a consideration. It's just not even on the table.
Right. So if you're asking, then why, you know, ask yourself that question. What's going on that's causing you to ask that question?
All right. Well, hopefully Tina was able to get something of value from that. I think she probably will. But we'll see what she has to say. Meanwhile, we have another question. This one's from Disha, I think it is. And Disha says, This is a rather long one, so bear with me. I have been in a relationship for the past 3 years. We started dating in 2017. I manifested him in my life with the law of attraction, I'm sure, because he was saying the same things I wanted, and he was better than I imagined. He chased me a lot, but somewhere in these years, I have been disloyal to him at times. She says, please don't judge me. Then she says, I feel regret about my behavior from the bottom of my heart, and I have only loved him in these 3 years, no one else. This year, since the lockdown, I could see his interest decreasing, and I became the one chasing, and also I became very negative, and also recently found out he's been disloyal too, not double dating, but flirting around and talking to girls on dating apps. Over the past year, I don't know if I manifested this behavior in him because he was crazy in love with me, and I know for sure I attracted him. My affirmations were loyal, divine love, divine relationship, et cetera, et cetera. So I don't know why this is happening. My heart says he's the one, but I don't have any trust on him. I can't understand whether my higher self is telling me to give up or hold on. I try to be grateful for him, and I do see some changes, some good changes, but again, I become negative and think of the disloyalty, and what if this happens again? I learned my lesson that I should be 100% loyal, but I don't know what to do about this relationship. I feel so stuck, and I've been trying to detach. In a way, I feel I attracted this experience to show me that I'm too attached to him, and I've been trying to detach. So what to do when I get mixed answers from the universe? I know 100% that he has loved me. He's given me 100%. But I don't know if I should trust him back or give up. I'm scared to trust him back, scared to believe 100% that he's the one, because what if I find something else in his phone? Well, I'm not sure what she's doing in his phone. What if he breaks it again and all the what ifs? Other than the disloyalty, he has everything I want. I just don't know what to do and how to have faith in the universe. So a little bit rambling, but I think you get the idea of it.
Yeah, I get the idea. I think a lot of things that we had talked about with Tina's question might apply here, mm-hmm. For Disha. But one of the things that I think is important to recognize is that trust takes time to build. Mm-hmm. And there is no way around that, especially once trust has been broken. And it sounds like trust has been broken in both directions in this relationship. So number one, if you're both willing to rebuild the trust, then you can make that decision between the two of you and that agreement. Building trust can be easy. It's a matter of doing what you say you're going to do, right? And not saying that you're going to do something that you're not going to do. So keeping your word. We've talked about that before too, how important it is to keep our word, just because especially in conscious creation, you want your word to be powerful, right?
Right.
I know,
absolutely.
I want my word to be powerful. So that means that when I speak something, I want it to be powerful. When I speak a blessing to you, I want it to be a powerful blessing, right? If I say a prayer for you, I want it to be a powerful prayer. If I work a spell, or, you know, it doesn't matter how you describe it, but we're talking about the power of words. So if my word doesn't really mean anything, and I'm always saying that I'll do this, but I don't do it, or, you know, don't keep my word, then my word loses power. So if you want your word to be powerful, then keep your word. And if you want to build trust, then you're going to have to keep your word to each other. And it might be a process that takes a little bit of time. Now, there's something else that's important to know about trust. And that is, you know, you say you're afraid to trust because what if it doesn't work? Or what if you trust and then they break trust again? But, you know, if you trust someone and they betray you, that's not on you. It's not on you. Now, yeah. If you trust the same person that keeps betraying you over and over and over, that might be on you, right?
Yes, absolutely.
We have to recognize that when there's a pattern, and we have to recognize when someone is showing us, like I said to Tina, when someone shows you who they are, believe them. But that doesn't mean that just because something happened once, it's going to happen again and again and again, right? There's some room there to be generous and gracious, especially because it's happened on both sides. And so it's like, okay, we learned our lesson. We don't want to do this again. You have the power to make the conscious choice not to do it again. That's within your power. And so there's, you know, that idea that there's actually an idea called the rule of three that says, you know, the first time someone stands you up or tells you a lie or does something, you know, that's not untrue, breaks faith with you, the first time might just be a bad mistake. The second time, maybe even a worse mistake. The third time, this is probably just what's going to keep happening. So that's a rule that, you know, some people hold to. But I just think that if it's what you both want, this can be a conversation. And the conversation says, I really want to trust you and I want to rebuild my trust for you. And I want you to be able to trust me and I want to do everything I can to rebuild that. And if both people are in agreement, then do what you need to do to make that real.
In this particular case, he has basically been moving away. That's the sense that I got from what she wrote, from what Disha wrote. And I also got a sense of something else, and I'm curious to know what your take is. She kept emphasizing over and over again how it's 100% that she loves him, 100% that he loves her. And I take that at her word. But the question I have is it possible that perhaps on some level she's feeling that this is the only person who will ever love me 100%? This is the only person I can love 100%. And the reason I ask that is, for whatever reason, we don't need to know what the reason is, for whatever reason, they both deviated. Mm-hmm. Why did they deviate? There's got to be something. That doesn't just happen by accident. There's a reason why they deviated. And so I'm wondering, is there like an attachment here to, oh my God, this is the one. And if I screw this up, I am doomed for life.
You know, I understand the feeling of wanting to find the one, because I have my own definition of what that means. And I could say that I'm married to the one because I think we're a great match. But I also think there are a lot of the ones out there. There are billions of people on the planet. So I have a hard time ever believing that there is only one person that could be a great match with me. And I know when I even wrote a book, it's on the app. It's about the soulmate relationship, right? But I have a specific definition for that. And it is not that there's only one soulmate for you and that, you know, if there really was only one for you, wouldn't that be a miracle to find them at all?
Yeah, no kidding.
And I think that's what people feel like sometimes, because when you fall in love, all these chemicals start happening. Your brain starts producing all these wonderful chemicals, lots of phenylethylamine that causes you to not want to worry about eating or sleeping anymore, right? You're just floating on clouds and just feeling so good. That happens to everybody when they fall in love, and it is a wonderful experience. And it's easy to think, oh, this is the one. This is got to be the one. I feel so great. How could it? I've never felt like this about anyone before. I actually had someone in my life years ago that would fall in love with someone new, you know, every year, and would always say, I've never felt like this about anyone before. And yes, that's probably true. We're all unique and different, and every love experience is unique and different. But I don't think that there's just one person for you or for anyone else. I don't hold to that kind of belief system. So that may or may not feel good for you to hear. But I think it's a good question. Well, it's a good insight to think of. Are you holding on to each other because you really think there's, now we're back to fate. We're back to fate practice, right? It's like, are you holding on to each other because you think this is fate and like it's meant to be? And if you don't, then you're going the wrong direction, right? It's like,
there's a little fate? Fear in there too, really. It's not just fate, it's fear. It's like, oh my God, I could screw this up and be ruined for life.
You know, Florence Scovel Shen used to say something. I've been trying to remember the quote the whole time, but it's hard to remember a quote and be talking about something else.
Yeah, right.
But it was something like, you know, I mean, it was really like, if this person is meant to be your mate, then you can't lose them. Right? Like, it's not that easy. it's meant to be, it's going to be. Now, I don't know if Florence was a fate practice believer or not, but I think that sometimes we get too worried about that. We get, like you said, a little too attached. And we don't really have to be, because first of all, you came into this world with everything you need to be complete. So you're not looking for someone else to make you whole. Right? That whole, like, you complete me, you know, the Jerry Maguire movie, that famous line, you complete me. Right. No, actually, two people don't need each other to complete them if they're both whole. Like, I am complete in myself. I don't need anyone to complete me. And my husband is complete in himself. And together we complete a couple. We are a couple. But I don't need someone else to complete me. So that may be something to consider, just that idea.
In fact, I would take it a step further and say that for those people who really rely on somebody else to, quote, complete them, unquote, in some way, what they're really saying is, that's a part of myself I don't really want to develop. I'm going to let my partner take care of that part for me. And that kind of, lots of people form relationships like that. The problem with those relationships is they're unstable, because you're always dependent upon the other person to take care of that aspect of you that's really yours. And similarly, he is responsible for something about you that really is, you know, it gets so messed up. And literally the relationship can fall apart pretty easily, because both sides are saying, I'm not complete without you.
Yeah.
But when you come at it saying, I am complete in myself, and you start thinking of yourself as being complete in yourself, and if there are areas that you need to work on, you work on the areas of yourself. Right. That's how Louise and I worked out. Louise and I, we had this conversation a few days back, but when we first met, we met in our 40s. And we said, we fit so well together. Why couldn't we have met earlier? And Louise instantly, of course, Louise was a psychotherapist, so this came to her really quickly. But she said instantly, you wouldn't have wanted to know me 20 years ago. If you had known me 20 years ago, you would have turned and run in the opposite direction, because I was so codependent. And I realized, you know, she was right, and I had things of my own I had to work on too. It couldn't have worked 20 years before. It happened when it was the best time to happen, because both of us had done work on ourselves to become whole, complete people unto ourselves. By the way, that's the best way to love. Just saying. Just
throwing it in there. Oh, that's so true. Well, you know, we talked about this a couple episodes ago on the podcast about, and we touched on it today, but the idea of expecting our partners to automatically know what we need.
Yes.
Without us asking. And, you know, I got some feedback about that show from someone who said, you know, looking back, they can totally see how they were in that mindset of like, well, if you really loved me, you would know what I wanted. You would know how to take care of me. You would know what I needed. I wouldn't have to be asking all the time. I wouldn't have to be telling all the time. And that falls right into that same kind of thing, right? It's like, I don't even want to have to be responsible for knowing what I need or asking for what I need. I want you to do that. Like, you take care of that. And no way. And, you know, sometimes I coach people and I say, look, the older we get, especially when I'm coaching, like you said, you met Louise in your 40s. Mm-hmm. I was almost in my 50s when I met my husband. I was 49. Mm-hmm. And I will tell people, look, especially when I'm coaching people that want relationships or working on relationships in their late 30s, in their 40s, in their 50s, maybe 60s, right? I'm saying, look, the older you get, the more baggage you have. That is for all of us. The more life experiences we've had, the more things that we've had that have maybe been disappointing in our life, the more wounds we have. Why? Well, because we've lived here longer. And everybody has some baggage. But, you know, when you see the adult with the little child walking to the train station and the adult is carrying both suitcases, that's because that's a little child and they can't lift their suitcase. Once you're two adults, you know, you need to be able to carry your own bags, right? You got to carry that baggage yourself, work on it yourself, do the work to grow yourself, and then everything will change in the relationship. And if it doesn't change, then maybe there's some abuse going on. Seriously. Mm-hmm. I mean, I sometimes talk to people that say, you know, I've done this and this and this and this, and and this partner is still really treating me badly, it's like, well, maybe, maybe there is a point where we recognize, I think this is abusive. I don't know what else I can do different. And then we realize that to respect ourselves, we don't stay in those kind of relationships.
That's a really good answer. And it rounds out what we were trying to identify as we were answering this question for Disha. And it also lines up perfectly with the next question. I think it's probably the last question for this episode from Tasha. Tasvia, excuse me. I actually had to run her name through Google Translate because it was an Arabic name and I couldn't read the Arabic, but it translates to Tasvia. So
okay.
Hopefully I'm pronouncing it correctly. But Tasvia says, hello, I have a question. And by the way, we've actually answered a question for Tasvia previously with one of my other co-hosts a few days back. So this is her second time writing in. So thank you for writing in again. She says, I have a question. When I was 4 or 5, I would always watch my parents fight in front of me. Now, I know that if I don't heal when I will be in a relationship, the patterns will come back and I will engage in a fight with my partner too. So my question is, how do I heal from this? How do I unlearn the pattern so that I can have a peaceful relationship?
That's a great question, and I think it's an experience that many people have had, watching their parents argue or quarrel or fight. First of all, you're already recognizing that it's not something that you want. And I'm not sure that, you know, I think I heard the word pattern in there, like, you know, worrying about continuing the pattern. So there's a question there, and that is from me to you, and that is it a pattern? You know, is it a pattern that you learned and that you see playing out in your life? Or is it an experience that you witnessed that you don't wish to have? Because those are kind of two different things, right? Like, I can say that I too remember being a small child about that age. My parents divorced when I was 5 or 6. And I remember being 4 or 5 and seeing my parents fight and not being happy about it, feeling scared, not knowing what to do, wanting it to stop. But moving into my life, I already knew at a very young age that that wasn't how I wanted to relate to people. And so I didn't. And so it wasn't a pattern for me. It was just an experience I witnessed. And so that's a question to ask yourself. Is this actually a pattern in your life? If it is a pattern, then you've recognized the pattern, and that's the first step in breaking the pattern. Mm-hmm. So the way you change that is you learn how to resolve conflict in other ways. You learn how to resolve conflict by having smart communication, by being compassionate and generous and curious and asking questions, asking for what you want, you know, communicating with somebody that you love and not having to have it turn into a fight. It certainly doesn't have to turn into a fight or an argument. We can communicate with people we're in relationship with to where both people are getting their needs met and not have to have it turn into a fight. And so just making the decision that that's not how you want to be, that's not how you want to navigate through a conflict. You know, as human beings, we all are unique. And so certainly we're going to have times when we have differences of opinion with each other, even the people we love the most. We're not always going to agree. And that's okay. Like, we don't have to always agree. But we can work things out in a way that doesn't involve fighting or arguing. And if you're someone who does that, like, I practically would say, make that your affirmation, right? It's like, learn, if you don't feel that you're good at communicating and working things out, take a class, read some books, do some research, figure it out. Like, I mean, that's one of, you know, go to my website. I actually have a product on my website called The Voice of Love. It's a product that's a 1-hour audio that will walk you through a conversation so that you can work these kind of things out without an argument.
That's good.
There are ways to do it. So that's how you do it. You just decide that, look, my parents fought when I was a kid. I hated it. I don't want to do that. And I'm not going to do that. It's a decision. It's a choice.
That's a great point. The fact that it's a choice, that it's a decision. So much of what we experience in life, we have this very strong tendency to assume that life happens to us outside of our control, outside of our power. And it's actually a mistake to draw that conclusion. That, well, that's more along the lines of the fated world we were talking about before. If everything is fated, then there's nothing, it doesn't make any difference what you do. Stuff's just going to happen to you. But if we believe in a conscious creation world, which is what I believe in, what you believe in, and we have plenty of experience to show that it actually is a conscious creation world, then fate is not a part of it. And it means we actually get to decide what happens in our lives. So make the decision, like you say. And make the decision based on what you feel is in your highest good.
And, you know, and don't settle. Some of this kind of goes over into the area of boundaries as well, right? So if you're in a relationship with someone who insists on arguing, the way you get that stop is you don't participate.
Right.
And that you make that clear. Like, I'm totally willing to sit down and have a civil conversation with you and hear you and really listen, because I want to know what you need and what you want. And I want you to know that about me, but I'm not willing to have an argument about it. That's a pretty strong boundary. And if you're with someone who continually wants to argue in spite of you putting up that boundary, then they are not honoring your boundaries. And then you have to decide if you want to be with someone who refuses to honor boundaries. Right? I mean, it's not always easy, but boundaries are simply letting someone know what's okay and what's not okay. And it sounds to me that you've made the choice or are in the process of making the choice that having consistent arguments and fights is not okay.
When my wife, Louise, when my wife was in practice as a psychotherapist, she had a game that she would play with a client to explain this exact concept to them, what you're describing right now. And like with most therapists, she had a couch and pillows and all that kind of stuff. And so she'd pick up one of the pillows and she'd toss it to her clients. She'd say, toss it back. The client would toss it back. She'd toss it to him again. She says, now toss it back again. And when the client tossed it back again, instead of catching it, she'd let it fall to the floor. And she said, that pillow is engagement in the argument. How do you stop the argument? You stop catching it. You stop catching the pillow.
Yeah, I've heard it as a tug of war. Just let go of the rope.
Same deal. Yep.
Yeah. Right. And so I hope that
And part of the reason for that, that I like that example is that it shows how extremely effective it is to simply stop playing the game. Because that's really what that is. It's playing a game when we get into that arguing mode. And when you just simply stop playing the game can't continue. It has to come to a stop. The person might try to pick up the pillow and toss it to you again, but if you just keep letting it fall to the floor, the game is over.
Yeah. So here's another thing, too, that I think I want to mention because it keeps coming to mind, and that is that the word healing was used a lot in that paragraph, in that question, right? Like, how do I heal from this? And one of the things I would encourage you to do is to recognize that it wasn't your fault. It wasn't about you.
Great point.
I mean, even if they were arguing about you for some reason, it wasn't about you. It was about them. They were making the choice to have an argument. I'm sure it was traumatic for you as a child, but the healing part is recognizing that you do not have to, you don't have to keep feeling wounded over it. It wasn't about you. It was their stuff and it was them. And they were working through something the only way they knew how. If they knew a better way, they would have. Just that knowledge so that you don't feel wounded that happened, that you had to, you know, witness that.
And that you're not responsible. You don't have responsibility for what they did. You are not responsible for them arguing under any circumstances.
Yeah.
You bear no responsibility for it at all. So any kind of guilt that you might associate, any kind of feeling that you were somehow a cause, no. That was them. That was not you at all. It was them.
Yeah. So, yeah, that whenever I hear somebody talking about healing from something, that's the healing, is let yourself off the hook.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
Yeah. And recognize that everybody's doing the best they can at any given time. And that includes your parents. They were doing the best they could. They had
interesting you should use that phrase, That's a phrase that I've learned to use lately. Whenever I run into somebody whose behavior I don't like, or perhaps their choices in life I don't like, you know, something they say I don't like, I remind myself, you know what? They're doing the best they can. And when I say that to myself, it takes all the charge out of whatever it is that I'm winding up to with whoever, you know, whoever this person is or whatever it is they're saying. And I'm able to leave it behind because it truly isn't mine anyway. I'm able to leave it behind a whole lot easier just by saying that phrase.
It helps so much. That phrase is so powerful because it's not our responsibility, right? Mm-hmm. But here's the other part of that phrase. Just because you agree that someone is doing the best they can, it does not mean that you have to tolerate whatever it is they're doing.
Right.
Right? So that means that if someone is in relationship with you and they're being abusive or they're behaving in a way that you're having trouble tolerating, yes, they are doing the best they can, but it still doesn't mean that you have to accept behavior that's not acceptable to you. And, you know, the easiest way I've explained that before to clients is, look, let's say you hire someone to remodel the tile in your bathroom, and they come in and they're completely screwing it up, and it's terrible, and the tiles are going up crooked, and it's just the most awful thing you've ever seen. Well, you don't just say, well, they're doing the best they can, and let them go.
You're right.
Can you completely ruin your house, right? No, you say, okay, I'm going to have to get somebody else in here who does an acceptable job, who does an excellent job. But I do realize that this person was doing the best they could. It's just not for me, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Especially when the tiles are crooked. Oh boy. Really good points. Really, really good stuff there. Before we wrap up for the day, I want to kind of revisit something you said earlier. You mentioned this product you had on your website. We haven't really done this in a while, but you are obviously an excellent relationship coach. I've done that for the last few years now. But anyone who might be interested in reaching out for you, tell them how they can reach you.
Yeah, well, you can reach me through the LOA Today app. You can,
first and foremost,
there's a contact button there. My website is cindychavez.com, CindiCHAVEZ.com. At my website, there's a button that says shop. And in the shop, there is a product called the Voice of Love. And it's a 1-hour workshop. It's not expensive. And it will help you with these conversations. So anybody that feels like you have conflict or you're worried about a difficult conversation, I recommend it. It's a very inexpensive, easy way to learn a communication style that will help you for the rest of your life. So, but you can reach me through the app, through the LOA Today app. Just, you know, reach out there and I'm happy. I always reply to people that reach out to me. Sometimes people are shocked because it's 4 or 5 days after they reach out to me, but I do eventually get to it and I do reply.
So I'd love That's to what happens to you. When you're a successful life coach like Cindy, you don't always get to the emails as lightly as you know, as quickly as you would like to, but she does get to them. It just may take a couple of days. That's all. I also want to point out there are actually two different places you can reach Cindy through the app. There is the question form, which we use primarily to ask questions here on the show for us to address. There's also a page for all the co-hosts, and there's a little bio about Cindy, and there's a link there that you can click. That's a more direct way to just ask her a question specifically off the air, so to speak. So two different ways to do it. But yeah, good stuff. So hopefully we helped 4 different people today, and that's fun. You know, we want
Wonderful.
More of that.
Yeah.
So take advantage. I mean, that LOA Today app is available for both iPhones and Androids. So regardless of what kind of phone you have, download it. It's free and it's got a lot of goodies on it. It's got a piece of goodie that Cindy left for us. She gave us one of her eBooks, The Lovely Magician's Guide to Soulmate Success. Wonderful little eBook there. Anybody who wants to understand relationships better, that's a good place. So yeah, good stuff. So thank you, Cindy. I'm looking forward to doing this again next week. Yeah. Thank you also to everybody who sent in their questions, and we'll see you all next time here on LOA Today. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye, everyone.